This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Memorial Day means summer, and of course, summer means it's time for the Talk of the Nation's annual summer reading list. We know that's always the first thing that comes to everyone's mind as they make their plans for this season. That's why we've invited some book experts to give us their recommendations on what's new and interesting. And of course, we want your suggestions at well. What kind of summer reading do you like? Fantasy, biography, literature, or page turners? Maybe it's mystery or history. Later on in the program, San Francisco Giants play-by-play man Dave Fleming, whose mic died yesterday as Barry Bonds' 715th home run soared out of the ballpark. Oh, the humanity. But first, help us compile our summer reading list. What are you or your book club taking to the cabin or to the living room couch this summer? Join the conversation. Our number in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK, and our email address is talk@npr.org. Laura Miller is the book critic for Salon and a regular contributor to our summer reading list. She joins us now from our bureau in New York. Good to talk to you again, Laura.
It's great to be here.
Also with us is Oscar Villalone. He is the book editor for the San Francisco Chronicle, with us from the studios of member station KQED in San Francisco. Nice to have you on the program today.
Thank you, Neil.
And our third guest is Charlotte Abbott, senior editor at Publishers Weekly, also at our bureau in New York, tucked up there next to Laura Miller, I guess. Thank you for joining us today.
Hi, Neil.
Laura, let's start with you. What's number one on your list for reading this summer?
Well, I think the book that a lot of people are going to be talking about, although it's definitely a very intense book with some gruesome moments in it, is The Ruins by Scott Smith. This is a book that I would not recommend you pick it up if you have anything else you need to do in the next 8 hours or so, because you are not going to want to put it back down again. It's about five backpackers who are stranded in the Mexican jungle. And it's a kind of a combination of a very sort of grueling survival story. They have to deal with some basic issues like food and water. And then there's an extra menace that that takes them a long time to understand. And the thing that's so gripping about it is that it's very realistic. The people behave in very realistic ways, and the problems they face are very realistic, and yet there is this extra added element of horror to it that kind of takes it over the edge. Mm-hmm. It's a book that a lot of people are going to want to talk to other people about when they finish it.
This extra menace. You're not going to tell us what this extra
menace
is.
I don't want to ruin it.
Charlotte Abbott, is this going to be the Da Vinci Code of this summer?
Well, I would definitely say I've been hearing a lot of buzz about it, especially coming out of the Book Expo, which was last weekend. That's when all the booksellers get together.
And so there is definitely a buzz about it. Is there something that you're looking forward to reading when you go to the beach?
Well, I'll tell you one thing that everybody was talking about at Book Expo was a novel called Water for Elephants by Sarah Gruen, which is just out in hardcover from Algonquin. And one of the causes of excitement was that it's one of the first works of fiction that's really taken off. It's been a quiet spring, I think, in the wake of James Fry and Katya Vasnavathan. And the sort of plagiarism and memoir scandals have kind of dampened enthusiasm for books for a while.
Hmm.
This one is, it's about a veterinarian who joins a second-rate circus during the Depression. And there's a love story. He falls in love with one of the performers. Unfortunately, she's married to a psychotic animal trainer. So it has a sentimental tinge, but a lot of people are enjoying it for its historical detail and, of course, for the love story.
Let's get Oscar into the mix out in San Francisco. Oscar Villalone, what's your number one pick for this summer?
Well, my number one pick is actually a book that came out in 1956 originally, but was reissued not too long ago by the New York Review of Books. It's Oakley Hall's Western Warlock, which some people may remember from, I guess, the movie with Anthony Quinn and Richard Widmark.
Mm-hmm.
But it is astounding, frankly. It's a big, fat tome in the best sense. It's beautifully written, and it's absolutely gripping. Technically, yeah, it's a Western in that it involves the town of Warlock. It's set somewhere probably, could be around, it looks like Arizona, around the Arizona-Mexico border. And it's a struggle for the civility of the town. That is to say, are they going to let the outsiders, who literally live outside the town, take control of it? or will civilization triumph in the form of the businessman and their plans for, you know, for basically, well, growing the town and making it respectable and maybe one day even making it a county seat? Now, that's the, if you will, that's the front story. But the backdrop, the real story, is that this struggle becomes a, well, you know, a metaphor for the whole American experience, basically, not only of trying to settle a, you know, so-called wild land, but also dealing with the fact that how vicious people can be, or, you know, doing, you know, evil in the name of good, these sort of things. And it's also just, it's just flat out suspenseful, and the action is beautiful, and the characterizations are lovely. It's literature. It's don't mistake for it, you know, for anything else. It is actually literature, but it's a beautiful genre work.
When was it first published with that cast in the movie? Some time ago.
Right. I think 1956 is when the book originally came out. And New York Review of Books reissued it with an introduction by Robert Stone and with a blurb from, of all people, Thomas Pynchon, who apparently could not get enough of the book when he was in Cornell and just read it and reread it and reread it. It's told in two different ways. One, there is a diary that's written by one of the local businessmen. And it's written in this arch-Victorian sort of speak. And it's very florid and funny. And then the rest of it is in this third-person omniscient. That's this plain, stripped-down prose, but very, very muscular. And it's a prose that if you've read Cormac McCarthy or Robert Stone, you'll recognize it right away. And basically, Oakley Hall was the first guy to do this. He's probably more better known now for running the UC Irvine MFA program and also for running the Squaw Valley Writers Workshop for years and years and years. But I'm telling you, this book, it's perfect for the summer. It's fat. It's like 500-odd pages. It'll totally involve you. And it's gruesome in some parts, but also in others, just the descriptions of the landscapes are just stunning. Also stunning because of the fact that, you know, he does in few sentences what some people would, you know, milk for paragraphs. Anyway.
Anyway, if you're
anyhow, that's, you know, it's a good book, is what I'm saying.
If you're scurrying around the house looking for a pencil to write down some of these titles, don't worry. You can go to our website. Our critics have been kind enough to give us their list to post on our website at the Talk of the Nation page at npr.org. We're also going to be adding our listeners' recommendations. So call and tell us what you're picking up to pack for the beach this summer, or whether you're going, in fact, to the beach or just the backyard. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is talk@npr.org. Let's get some recommendations from Carl. Carl calling from Sonoma in California.
Hi, this is Carl from Sonoma.
Yes.
It looks like the Bush administration's taken us into an endless war. So my wife and I are reading American Theocracy by Kevin Phillips and State of War by James Risen to try to give us some more perspective on this endless war.
That's pretty heavy literature for summertime reading, don't you think?
Well, it's a pretty heavy time in our history, don't you agree?
I would.
It's time to read something serious instead of fluff. Americans and untold numbers of Iraqis are dying for oil. Hmm.
Charlotte Abbott, is summertime in the publishing industry seen as a... Thank you very much, by the way, Carl, and we'll add your recommendations to our webpage. Is summertime reading seen as a... Well, those are pretty thick, dense works. You know, Cobra 2, the recent history of the invasion of Iraq. Is summer when those kind of books sell, or is it more page-turner time?
I think certainly most people think of it as page-turner time, but it's been interesting in the last couple of years because political books really have had more of an audience. And I think for some of these heavier books, people have a little bit more time to delve into something that's dense, and when they're on vacation, they can mix it up with other lighter things. So it's going to be interesting to see, because we're going into the midterm elections. There's a lot of political books coming down the pike this fall. Some are starting to land a little bit in the summer. And it's a question, you know, how well they're going to do, how many people are feeling, what that caller was feeling.
Mm-hmm. We'll find out, I guess, when is summertime. Will the spring lists come out? Is that with an eye towards summer?
Absolutely. I think this April was a very heavy month, a lot of books landing in anticipation of Mother's Day and Father's Day, which were two of the biggest book-buying holidays. And usually whatever becomes a bestseller in those months tends to carry through to the summer.
All right. Let's get another listener suggestion. Jeannie calling from Swallow Meadows in California.
It's Swallow Meadows.
Okay, go ahead.
By the Sierras. And I'd like to recommend The Last Season. It just came out April 1st, and it's by Eric Blehm, or Blehm, B-L-E-H-M. It's an incredible read.
And what's it about?
It's about a true story of a backcountry ranger in Sequoia Kings National Park. He went missing, I think, in 1996, and so it's the whole epic of finding him and, you know, what a search is involved, what's involved in a search in a national park. But it's also a really interesting perspective on what it's like being a backcountry ranger.
Hmm.
And it was an incredible read. I'm giving it to a lot of friends for summer. If you backpack, if you go into the mountains, it's in hardcover, but well written. It's just a great, great read.
Is this a true story or one that purports to be true?
The ranger's name is Randy Morganson.
Uh-huh.
So it's a story of his life and, like I said, about what rangers do and how rangering has changed since the Wilderness Act came into, since that was legislated. And very interesting.
All right. Thanks very much.
You're welcome. Take care.
Bye. Oscar Villalona, do you have any nonfiction recommendations for this summer?
Actually, I do. The one I'm recommending is Adam Hochschild's book, Bury the Chains, Prophets and Rebels and the Fight to Free an Empire's Slaves. It came out, I think, last fall, but it's still in hardcover and maybe I think it's actually now in paperback. But anyway, Hochschild, your listeners may know him from his last book, King Leopold's Ghost, which was his nonfiction account of the Belgian king and his the atrocities.
Brutalities.
That he oversaw in the Congo. And this is sort of an offshoot from that, because what Hochschild did is he went back to sort of that story and looked at basically what was the first human rights movement in the West, where you had a group of people who banded together and basically said that slavery was unacceptable. Now, they did this at a time when slavery was more the common condition than freedom. I mean, we tend to focus on, the South and stuff. But anyway, that's the one. It's a beautiful piece of narrative history, if I may use the word beautiful again.
All right. We're talking today about summer reading, ours and yours, 800-989-8255, email talk@npr.org. We'll all be back after the break. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Today we're compiling the Talk of the Nation summer reading list. We've asked book critics and experts to give us some of their thoughts on page turners and literature for this summer. You can see the full list of their picks and some listener choices, too, at the Talk of the Nation page at npr.org. Our guests are Laura Miller, book critic for Salon, Oscar Villalone, the book editor for the San Francisco Chronicle, and Charlotte Abbott, senior editor at Publishers Weekly. Of course, you're invited to participate as well. 800-989-8255 is our phone number. You can also send us email talk@npr.org. And Laura Miller, as we've mentioned, page turners. Any mysteries in your list this year?
Well, I do have one. The new sort of darling of the crime writing field is a woman named Denise Mina. She's Scottish, and her second book to feature the character Patty Meehan, who is a very young working class woman working for a newspaper, trying to make a career for herself as a journalist in Glasgow in the 1980s, when she's the only woman in the office, and she is this kind of insecure, awkward, but ambitious young woman who's trying to make her way in the world, and then also sort of trying to figure out what's going on in some of these stories that she covers. And the first book was called The Field of Blood, and the new one is called The Dead Hour, because it's about how she has to work the night shift in Glasgow, which is not the cheeriest town to begin with.
No, it's
and
not.
It's very gritty and very realistic, and she's just a very sympathetic character.
Hmm. Why don't we go to Oscar Villalone? Any ideas for science fiction this summer?
Well, yes, but even though technically it's not a sci-fi story when it came out, it's Kazuo Ishiguro's novel, Never Let Me Go. Ostensibly, well, this gets into a whole something else completely different, which is the idea of that sometimes we don't we don't find it compatible to say that something that's a genre work is also literature. But anyway, this book is Ishiguro's novel about – it's a coming-of-age story, essentially, of children who live in these sort of specialized school. And they live there from when they're very little to all the way through high school and graduate. And essentially, they're clones, human clones. And their destiny in life is essentially it's to provide organs. Now, that sounds that's the sci-fi and it sounds very grim, mm-hmm. but actually what it becomes is this beautiful meditation. There's that word again. Must be the weather in San Francisco. it becomes this meditation on the loss of innocence and coping with your immortality. Ishiguro wrote, of course, Remains of the Day, which is where most people probably know his work. And that same sort of subtlety of in his writing and that same sort of subtlety in his characterization and that carefully paints these pictures of these people are there, but at the same time there's also sort of that this creepy vibe from the outside of knowing that what's going to happen to them, because of course you can only donate so many organs before you can't donate anything at all. So that plays in the background again. I mean, technically it's sci-fi, but it's also literature. It's both.
Let's get another caller in. This is Anthony calling from Cape May in New Jersey.
Yeah, hi. I actually had three books, and then I thought of a quick fourth one also. First off, Altered Carbon by, I think it's Richard Thomas, outstanding cyberpunk sci-fi, very gritty and a wonderful
I believe that's Richard Morgan who wrote
Richard
that.
Richard Morgan, I'm sorry. I don't know why I came up with Richard Thomas. You're right, Richard Morgan.
And he's written two other, boy, he's a terrific writer.
He's fantastic. Still, Altered Carbon is my favorite of the three. Also, Absurdistan, which I think was also profiled on another show on NPR. Fantastic book.
And, the author of that is Gary Steingart.
Gary Steingart, thank you. And also, Al Franken's The Truth with Jokes. Literally kept me laughing. The Universe in a Single Atom by the Dalai Lama.
By the Dalai Lama?
Yes. It is an excellent piece of work.
All right. Anthony, thanks very much.
Thank you.
What's Absurdistan about?
Absurdistan is about a young man, or he's around 30, and very, very... very big man who is a Russian citizen, but he's been going to college in the U.S. and he gets stranded in Russia and he's trying to get back to the U.S. and he has all of these kind of grotesque and hilarious and horrifying adventures in post-Soviet Russia and this satellite state called Absurdistan.
All right. Let's get another caller in. This is Gareth, and Gareth's with us from San Francisco.
Yeah, hi. First of all, I'd like to say hi to Charlotte. She's an old friend of mine. I haven't talked
Garrett.
To her in a long time.
Hey, hello.
Hey, so great to hear you.
Likewise.
Still in the same apartment? Anyway, go ahead.
I'm sorry, what?
I was just making a joke. Go ahead.
Okay. I'm really quite busy, so I usually don't have a whole lot of time to sit down and do a lot of reading. But I've been doing a lot of reading of poetry, and I'm wondering if anybody has any suggestions on summer poetry reading. I've been reading a lot of Jarrell now that we're involved in this fabulous crisis, and I'm wondering if anybody has any contemporary.
I can actually think of somebody who's great if you don't have a lot of time. Her name is Kay Ryan, and she writes very short poems that have the advantage that you almost never find in contemporary poetry, which is that they're very witty. And I have often been reading her books. The one that I think of off the top of my head is Elephant Rocks, but she has a more recent one that's called Niagara. I've been reading them on the subway sometimes and laughed out loud, and I think that that's probably the most extraordinary thing about them, is that they're literally so clever and so funny that you might laugh out loud.
I actually heard Kay Ryan recently speaking about her work, and it sounds really, really great. I haven't actually yet to read her, but
she's good, yeah.
They're also very short.
And along those lines, too, I mean, it came out a while ago, but if you want to check out James Fenton's last poetry collection, Out of Danger, that also has the advantage of being brief, but also incredibly witty, very moving, and rhythmic.
All right. You keep saying brief. People don't write epic poetry much anymore, do they?
Some of them can seem
Merwin
pretty
does,
long.
Yeah.
All right.
Too long.
All right.
Check out Merwin's book on Hawaii if you want epic.
A typical K. Ryan poem might be only 8 or 10 lines long. Hmm. So they're very short.
You might also want to try, in honor of Stanley Kunitz, who just passed away, the former, to look up some of his, maybe his collected poems, or go back to some of his work.
Oh, yeah.
And they're all short, too.
Mm-hmm.
Gareth, thanks very much, and catch up with your friends, not on the radio, okay?
I certainly will.
All right.
All right.
Let's see if we can get another caller in. This is Ronnie. Ronnie calling from New York City.
Hi. I just wanted to ask two questions. Number one, is anyone looking forward to the next Harry Potter book, or is it just me? Because, I don't know, I mean, in the middle of reading all this serious stuff about the war and everything, the world of muggles and wizards just seems that much, you know, more enthralling.
I think it's you and me, Ronnie, and about 14 billion kids.
Harry who?
I know, it just seems so much better to read about that than open a newspaper and read about what's going on in the rest of the world.
Yeah.
And I have one more question to the people, you know, in your panel, that is there anything good in the historical genre, which is going to come out this summer, which doesn't have the word Da Vinci, Templar, Priory of Sion, and, one more, Mary Magdalene, anything like that?
I do have one.
Go ahead.
It's called The Pale Blue Eye by Louis Bayard, and It is set in the early 19th century at West Point when Edgar Allan Poe was... as either a student or a cadet. I can't remember what his exact status was. And there is a mystery. Some of the cadets turn up dead, and a detective comes in to try to figure out what's going on, and Edgar Allan Poe becomes his friend and assistant in solving this mystery. It's very moody, and it very much has a feeling of the Hudson River Valley in the early 1900s, and it's fairly accurate about Edgar Allan Poe's personality, so you might want to check that one out.
Also, I recommend, along those lines, in terms of historical novel, would be Luis Alberto Urrea's novel, The Hummingbird's Daughter. It won the Kiriyama Prize, I think, this year. And it's set in northern Mexico, in the state of Sinaloa, which is sort of like central north. It's his story, basically about a relative of his, I guess, who at some point became sort of like this unofficial saint. And it's 19th century Mexico going into early 20th century. It's beautiful. Oh, there's that word. And he's a poet. And so every single line in that book is written with the sort of care that you normally don't find in a lot of novels. And the pages fly by. And it's got everything in it. It's got war, love, tragedy. It's hilarious. And it's probably one of the best novels, frankly, to come out in the last 5 years.
Ronnie, were you looking for historical fiction or history?
Mainly, actually, but you know, I think the first one that she said, the Edgar Allan Poe one, really seems interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And one more thing, I just a quick anecdote. I had a big discussion with one of my nieces in India, and they're all convinced that Harry is the final Horcrux. So if J.K. Rowling turns up with that, you heard it from me first.
All right. Well, speaking of history books, Nathaniel Philbrick, who had, of course, the great success with his previous books, has a doorstop coming out about the Pilgrims. Anybody read that?
The Mayflower.
Yes.
It's about the Mayflower.
And it goes all the way to King Philip's War. I've just read the blurb. Mm-hmm. I haven't read the book, but he's certainly describing the trials of that whaler. The Essex had a great success with that, so new one coming out. So anyway, thanks for the call, Ronnie. Appreciate it. And let's see if we can get another caller in on this. Let's go to Anya. Anya calling from Green Bay in Wisconsin.
Yes, hello. Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
And it is a summer ritual of mine. You've caught me out here in the garden to read The Great Gatsby every year since I was about 12.
What about that book entrances you to such a degree that you read it every year?
Well, I think because it's A, so beautifully written and so concisely written. Hunter Thompson used to retype the book just to practice the act of writing because it's so well done. There's not one word more or less than you actually need to tell the story.
I always associate Gatsby with summertime because, by chance, my family used to go see the fireworks in Rockville, Maryland, and we watched from the graveyard where Fitzgerald is buried.
Yeah. Well, it's a beautiful book, and I think it outlines a time that sort of created the sort of the birthing place of the myth of what America, sort of the high ideals of what America can be. And it's also a cautionary tale.
Well, thank you very much.
Well, thank you.
we're compiling today's talk of this summer's Talk of the Nation summer reading list, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And was that Oscar trying to get in there?
Yeah, no, I was going to say, there's nothing wrong with reading classics. In fact, you know, often, frankly, with all the books that come out every single year, and summer, you know, being perhaps the time people have the most time, you know, just to relax and to indulge themselves in terms of, whiling away the hours. There's nothing wrong with reading the Gatsbys and the Sound and the Furies and whatever it is you want to read along the, you know, that they're classics. Lord knows that they've at least stood the test of time.
Laura Miller, like me, you do a lot of reading professionally. It's such a pleasure. I always describe it as getting the chance to read a book without a pen in my hand.
Well, I don't know if that happens very often in my case. Even when I'm reading, we do our summer reading special, which we call Page Turners with the Brain at Salon. And even when I'm plowing through very quickly a lot of really great, well-written but still very plot-driven novels like I am right now, I've still got that pen in my hand.
Still have the pen in your hand.
Yeah.
Charlotte Abbott, do you get to – what do you read when you take the pen out of your hand?
It's hard to think of a book that I haven't read with a pen in the hand. I guess certain graphic novels it might interfere with with what I'm finding on the page. And actually, speaking of those, there's a book that's coming out next month that I really love. It's called Fun Home by Alison Bechtel. She's been around for over 20 years. She wrote a comic strip called Dykes to Watch Out For that's been around for a really long time, sort of chronicling lesbian culture for many years, and by people like Harvey Pekar and really well-known graphic artists who really hail her as sort of one of the godmothers of graphic work. And she's written a memoir where she puts her entire life under the microscope. It's a wonderful father-daughter story. She lived in a family with many secrets, and you learn quickly what some of her fathers were. And it's really, you know, like an onion, she sort of unpeels the layers of her life. And it's a really haunting, wonderful story that I think anyone who grew up in a family with secrets can relate to.
Hmm. This is a book that a lot of people are talking about this summer.
Really?
Yeah.
Are graphic novels, is this medium grown up?
Oh, yeah.
Well, and absolutely. I also think that the graphic memoir, which is, Mouse was possibly the first one, and then Persephone is another one about growing up in Iran. And I think it's a sort of genre where some of the people who are worried that they might be reading a comic book and they're not sure how they feel about that are more comfortable because they know it's a true story. And Alison Bechtel is an incredibly talented woman, and it's great to see her getting all this attention.
Also along those lines too, Jessica Abel, who had her graphic novel La Perdida that came out from Pantheon not too long ago. I think it came out in March. She also, speaking of fantastically talented female graphic artists or graphic novelists, hers is the story about a half Mexican, half Anglo young woman who travels to Mexico City to try to reconnect with her roots. And becomes a pretty interesting observation about culture clash and identity and this sort of stuff. And then segs into a pretty interesting crime story involving a kidnapping. I think originally came out as a series of comic books and then was collected by Pantheon to one big volume.
Yeah, a lot of graphic novels are issues of comic books collected together. Be careful. Some of those are perhaps not of the quality we're discussing here, though. There's a wonderful writer by the name of Brian Vaughan who's got a book coming out out. I've just seen an advance of it called The Pride of Baghdad. It's about the Baghdad Zoo, and as you might suspect, it's a bit of an allegory coming out later this summer. So that might be something you want to look forward to if you're into graphic novels. We're going to have to take a short break. When we come back, more picks for our annual summer reading list, plus Barry Bonds hits number 715, and the announcer's mic goes dead. We'll find out what happened after the break. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. In a few minutes, the microphone malfunctioned at the milestone moment in San Francisco yesterday. But first, we continue our conversation about the annual summer reading list we compile. Our guests are Laura Miller. She's the book critic for Salon. Also, Oscar Villalon, the book editor for the San Francisco Chronicle, and Charlotte Abbott, senior editor at Publishers Weekly. Here's an email we got from Jamie in Oakland. I'm not a mystery reader, but a friend recommended Faint of Art, which is the first in a new series about art forgery and theft, set in San Francisco and features a great heroine and a truly funny cast of characters. It reminds me of Janet Ivanovich's early books, Funny, Smart, and a Really Great Beach Read. Well, that's what we're looking for, beach reads today. Why don't we turn to Charlotte Abbott? Anything else on your recommendation list?
Well, I know you like science fiction, so I put out some feelers for you, and I think the movie version of A Scanner Darkly by Philip K. Dick is probably going to send a lot of people back to the book. The film is coming in July, and it's a classic novel about the perils of drug use, which is kind of funny because, of course, we remember Philip K. Dick as a countercultural icon, but he wrote the novel as a cautionary anti-drug tale because he destroyed his own health through drugs. And in fact, he acknowledges a lot of other friends in the book who he lists their names as people who have suffered the consequences of their profligate drug use. And it was written in the 70s, but it's set in the 90s. So it sort of anticipates the law and order ethos we now associate with the war on drugs.
Philip K. Dick, a prolific writer, which is a good thing since about half of his stuff has now been made into movies. So,
Actually, there's a graphic novel version of that coming from Pantheon as well as the original.
Look forward
novel.
To that. I have read the book, and Three Stigmata of Palmer Eldritch, one of my favorite.
That's my favorite one.
Yeah, that's just a terrific book. And when the movie's going to be fabulous, whenever it's made. So let's see if we can get another caller on the line. This is Nancy. Nancy calling from Louisville, Kentucky.
Hey, I am a high school librarian, and we have a reading program called the Kentucky Bluegrass Awards. And at the 9 to 12 level, they read about 15 books. I mean, they don't have to read all 15, but they can choose from 15. The choice this year of the high school students in Kentucky was Looking for Alaska. Now, I have to tell you, I haven't read it, but it's the book that they chose. Mm-hmm. And so that might be something that younger people might want to read. Actually, younger people, too. Because a lot of those books are really books that are worthy of any age.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody earlier asked about poetry. A poet that we really like here is Frank X. Walker, and he has a new book called Black Fox. I'm not sure who the publisher is and how you can find it on Amazon, I know.
What kind of poet is he?
He's black, and he writes about African-Americans, but they, of course, have greater themes than just that. And he wrote about another one of his poetry books is about York, the slave that went with Lewis and Clark. And, of course, they're heading back. You know, this is the return year. And it's called Buffalo Dreams. And he's just wonderful. He reads a lot at our library things here in Kentucky. And I really, really like his poetry. And so if anybody's looking for poetry, they're not real long. But his, like in this Black Box, they're about kind of unsung, unknown black folk of Kentucky. But, again, he's a I'm not black, and I think anybody, you know, could find messages in his poetry.
All right, Nancy, thanks very much.
Uh-huh.
Let's see if we can turn now to, this is Kathleen. Kathleen in Charlotte.
Hello.
Hi, Kathleen. You're on the air.
Hi. Nice to speak with you.
Nice to speak with you.
I would like to recommend a wonderful book that I just finished called The Lost Child by Keith Donahue. It's about
it follows the lives of two characters. One is a changeling, an Irish spirit, and the other is the child that he steals and replaces. So it follows the two characters throughout the next 40, 50 years of their lives. And it's a lot about identity and finding your place in the world. It's very, very lyrically written.
All right. This is out already?
It's just been out. It's been out probably about a month.
All right.
The title is The Stolen Child.
Stolen Child. I'm sorry, what did I say?
That's right. The Lost Child. But it's very close. And it's interesting because there was actually a special campaign on Amazon.com where they got all of their reviewers to review it ahead of time. So there's been a lot of online talk and buzz about it.
All right. Kathleen, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye. Have a great summer.
Thank you.
Let's see if we can get one recommendation from each of our reviewers before we have to wind this up. Oscar Villalon in San Francisco.
Yeah, I have one more. One more I'd like to recommend. It's Elizabeth McKenzie's novel and story, Stop That Girl. It's extremely funny. It's essentially a bunch of stories about an 8-year-old girl growing up in Southern California and how all the sort of zany, for lack of a better word, things that happen to her as she gets older, particularly just trying to fit in her family. She feels sort of a misfit. She has this grandmother who's a doctor, Dr. Frost, who also seems to be a little bit out of her mind. She's kind of like Holly Golightly at 70 and keeps dragging her out of her normal existence and putting her in very awkward situations. I think people may really, really dig that one for the summer. Again, it's one of the very few things I've read that made me laugh out loud. There's a lot of things you read that are somewhat funny. You kind of snicker a little bit, but you start cracking up like a madman on the bus and people look at you.
Yes. But Christopher Moore has that effect on me.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Charlotte Abbott, another one from you?
This is a true crime memoir called Strange Piece of Paradise by Terry Gents, just out in hardcover from FSG. It's a memoir by a woman who was 7 days into a bike journey across the country in 1977 when she was a Yale student. And she and her roommate were run over in their tent and attacked by a man with an axe. It seems almost a cliche, and yet she had to survive it. Her arm was gashed and her friend was nearly blinded from head injuries. And the culprit was never found. And she felt she lost a part of herself and innocence, but more than that, in the experience. And she was haunted by it, as you can imagine. 15 years later, she went back to the town in Oregon to try to recover the part of herself she lost, and found that the town hadn't really been able to move on either. The man who many people suspected of this crime was still among them, and she follows the story to a point of some emotional resolution. And it's not quite In Cold Blood, but I think readers who like that kind of story will find some real chills and catharsis there.
Laura Miller, you will be our alpha and our omega.
Okay. I'll try to take that responsibility seriously. This is a late addition to my list. In fact, I'm still reading it right now, so I can't swear to the ending. But I'm really loving a novel called Moonlight Hotel by Scott Anderson. And it's for those sort of Graham Greene fans out there, it's set in the 1980s in a kind of backwater, Middle Eastern nation, and the hero is the sort of mid-level American diplomat, and this gung-ho American colonel who's a military advisor comes to this little sleepy country and stirs up this border war, and it just keeps escalating into one more debacle after another until the whole nation is just bathed in blood. And it's sort of bitterly funny. It's about the Americans who foolishly get into situations, foreign adventures that they don't really understand, and how the least competent people sometimes wind up running the show. It's the man who wrote it is a foreign correspondent, so I think some of the most chilling parts are just the descriptions of things like what happens to a city when it starts to be shelled and that sort of thing. And it's just, it's suspenseful and sort of mysterious so far. I don't know what the ending is, but I'm just loving that.
Our critics' recommendations are already compiled at our website. Go to the Talk of the Nation page at npr.org. We'll be adding your recommendations too. So the later you log in, the more you'll get. So anyway, thanks to you all. Laura Miller, book critic for Salon, with us from our bureau in New York, along with Charlotte Abbott, the senior editor at Publishers Weekly. Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And Oscar Villalona, the book editor for the San Francisco Chronicle, who joined us from the studios of member station KQED in San Francisco. Our thanks to you as well.
Anytime, sir.